Final hour on this Thursday that's live and local all day and then gets going with the Cowboys. What a busy day we have here. Live and local all day and then 7 o'clock tonight, Longhorn Weekly with Coach Chris Beard. And then Isaiah Collier with his great new show, The Right Call, over on 101.9 AM 1260. It's the Cowboys and Saints from the Big Easy. Good news for the Cowboys is it looks like Amari Cooper will be back, and maybe for the third time this year, the Cowboys will have Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, and Michael Gallup all on the field at the same time, which poses quite a threat and gives Dak Prescott as good a receiving core as anybody has in the NFL. But they haven't been able to get those guys on the field together. Bad news for the Cowboys, Mike McCarthy won't be there tonight. He's battling COVID. Nor will Joe Philbin, the offensive line coach. Nor will Terrence Steele, the offensive line men.
Coach Quinn will be there on the sideline.
You feel better about that?
Than Mike McCarthy on the sideline? I don't know. I saw him blow a lead.
But you saw him at a Super Bowl, too.
Yeah, he was on the sideline for that.
He was. He was there for 28-3.
But Zay's telling me that these defensive players love this dude. When they are getting it done.
They do like him. Look, I mean, in addition to getting Amari Cooper back, it says here that DeMarcus Lawrence is on track to return tonight from his foot injury. That would be big to get him back as a pass rusher. Neville Gallimore expected back as well. He's been out most of the season. That was their, second or third round pick last year in the draft 2 years ago out of Oklahoma, who they think is a really nice player for them on the interior of their D-line. No word on Randy Gregory yet, but the Cowboys are going to have to, because you know what you're getting tonight, Taysom Hill, right? He's not a passing quarterback. He's going to be a running quarterback more than anything, and that's you've got to be ready to run and make tackles and unleash Micah Parsons in a primetime spot. This is not an explosive Saints football team.
Yeah, that's where I see Michael Parsons inside more to go inside out.
Like inside at linebacker, not inside on the D-line. But
right.
Yeah, we'll see. You got to contain the run game here. And here's what you know about Sean Payton. He's a really, really smart football coach. We know that. And he's going to game plan. But players have to make plays. He doesn't have explosive players outside of Alvin Kamara. And it looks like Alvin Kamara is going to be out for this game tonight, which is huge advantage Cowboys. Kamara is far and away the best playmaker on the Saints offense. And he's been out now for 3 weeks, and they have not been a very good football team. So the Cowboys are 4.5 to 5 point favorite in that game tonight.
That seems about right, too.
It does. I mean, it seems like a game the Cowboys can win by a touchdown, right, at least.
And if they can get their run game going.
The only issue is...
Because all I've seen Emmett do lately, I'm not Emmett, what am I talking about? Zeke is being a cheerleader on the sidelines, trying to rev up the crowd for his big paycheck.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a slide for everybody. Last time we saw the New Orleans Saints, they were playing the Thursday night game on Turkey Day when the Cowboys were losing to Vegas. They played the Bills and got rolled 31-6.
Oh, yes.
31-6.
That's how the Bills got well.
Yeah. They're on a four-game losing streak right now, the Saints. They lost to Atlanta, Tennessee in a close one, Philadelphia, and Buffalo. But all the games until the Buffalo game have been close. They've kept themselves in it. They nearly beat Tennessee in Tennessee, lost to Atlanta by a deuce, lost to the Eagles in Philadelphia in a higher scoring game, but then got just blitzed by Buffalo on Turkey Day night.
But as you said, for the Cowboys, they're about to reach part of that schedule where they get the Giants and Washington, Eagles.
This is not a must win. It's a very important game for the Cowboys, and the only way they lose this game in my mind is if the offensive line really struggles with the noise and the crowd.
And they've got a bunch of stupid penalties.
Well, you can probably predict that's going to happen. This is the most penalized team in pro football. Hopefully they can clean that up, but you just can expect some hankies tonight. But the bigger issue would be sacks and turnovers. And how do you get sacks and turnovers is your offensive line struggles because it's, the Cowboys' offensive line has looked a step slow the last few weeks anyhow, especially against Kansas City. The last time they played a tough road game in a road environment, they scored 6 points. Or 9 points, went without a touchdown. And big part of it was the offensive line couldn't block anybody.
Very interesting. Even Broadus thought that game Thursday on Thanksgiving was just a bunch of junk by the officials, too.
Well, that was a poorly officiated game.
Out of control with those flags.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. But at the same time, those are two of the highest penalized teams in the league. So they got to be some ownership there from the team. But, yeah, they were over-officiating that football game. I believe that's fair. To say. But so can the offensive line bring it? Because we know when the Cowboys can be two-dimensional and run the ball, stay ahead of the chains, and then all three receivers back, they can be unstoppable offensively. But it starts up front, and they've got it. In that game against the Chiefs a few weeks ago, they didn't have Tyron Smith at left tackle. He should be back tonight. You know, they've made the adjustments on the interior of their offensive line. That needs to continue to improve, because that's the only way I see this being a close game tonight, is if the Saints just dominate the line of scrimmage on that side, and they, you know, they force a couple of turnovers, negative plays, holding calls, because that's the game the Saints want with Taysom Hill. They want this to be a lower scoring, grind it out kind of game that they can get into the fourth quarter and give themselves a chance.
Now, you got a guy on the screen, Kyler Murray. Is Kyler Murray back yet?
Yes, he practiced this week. It looks like he'll be back for the Cardinals game this week.
They got a little bit of slide going themselves.
Well, I'll say buck on to Colt McCoy, man. Isn't Colt McCoy exactly what you want in a backup quarterback?
Absolutely.
Your star quarterback goes down, and you know you're in the middle of a tough push in the NFC. And what did he go, 3-1, 2-1 in his time as a starting quarterback?
He may have been 2-1.
Had two really good games, and then you know one rough game. That's big time. That's exactly what you want from a starting backup quarterback. Step in, weather the storm of a banged up quarterback. To get, and when you come back, you're still right there in first place in the NFC. Colt did a heck of a job, but it does look like Kyler will be back. And it looks like DeAndre Hopkins will be back for the Cardinals this week, too. They've both been out. Yes. But Cowboys, Saints tonight, right here. Well, you'll hear it over on 101.9 and AM 1260. You'll see it on, was it Fox tonight? Is it a Fox game?
I think so.
Fox TV. I believe that's where we'll get this tonight with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. T. Roy. Hey, Buck, can we play this for the people? Because the big story of the college football week and the week in sports has been college football coaches bolting.
Yeah, we played it, and the people got every bit of it the first time around.
We've edited it now.
Yes.
Edited it.
Yes.
And thanks to Isaiah Collier for his keen editing skills. But this is funny. This will put a smile on
your face.
That's
how you win awards.
Well, I just got to say this again. This is a guy named Sam Swank. Found this on TikTok yesterday. And it's him. Every voice you hear is him. He's just, but he, in the TikTok video, which will, you know, have to get out there. I'll retweet it. He, you know, he dresses up as different players or coaches, and he's acting all of these out, all of these roles, and now he's edited it together into this video, and it's his take on college football coaches bolting from place to place. And what if that were your dad who made the decision to switch? Here's Sam Swank on TikTok with the college football conversation of the week.
Dude, are you seeing this? I think dad's leaving us for the Hendersons.
What'd you just say? Dad's bouncing?
Yep, it's true. Adam Schefter in ESPN4, the father, just tweeted it.
Dad just texted all of us.
Said he's going to address the family when he gets back home from the supermarket.
All right, guys. I'm absolutely devastated that you guys found out through social media and not me personally. I take that to heart as a man of my word, which I'm not, but it's true. I'm joining the Hendersons.
So what? You were just lying to our faces yesterday? And you sat us down right here in this living room. And you looked us directly in the eyes. And you said you weren't going anywhere.
And you were committed to us. This family.
I was committed. But then, you know, Mr. Henderson died in a freak whitewater rafting accident. And, you know, the dad position came open and they wanted me. And quite frankly, it was an offer I couldn't refuse.
What do the Hendersons have that we don't?
Literally everything. They're extremely wealthy. Ungodly wealthy.
They have homes in Miami, Malibu, and Turks and Caicos.
So what, our humble middle-class home here in Norman, Oklahoma isn't good enough for you anymore?
Also, Mrs. Henderson, my new wife, she's a 29-year-old yoga instructor. Smoking hot. I mean, God.
No offense, honey.
I'll f*** you, Jim.
So I guess loyalty means nothing anymore, huh?
I get it. I know you guys are upset. But you would do the exact same thing if you were in my position.
I mean, you couldn't have at least left after the holidays? Our season isn't even over yet, Dad. Like, who's going to put presents under the Christmas tree now?
It's not like you guys aren't going to have a new dad. I go to the Hendersons, and you're going to snatch a dad from another poor family. It's the dad carousel. Nature of the family business.
Okay, fine. So when are we going to find out who our new dad is?
Listen up. It's an absolute honor to be here, joining the Jones family as your new dad. And yeah, I get it. I'm looking around. Y'all are pissed. I'm not the dad that recruited you, shot you out of my balls, brought you into this world. But trust me, we're going to do great things here. We're going to be the best family in this neighborhood. But you know how we're going to do it? Discipline. Three things to start. No video games. No touching my thermostat. And last but not least, a firm 9 p.m. bedtime.
9 p.m.?
What? That's going to be a no for me, dog. I'm going straight to the adoption portal.
There we go. Well done, young man.
That's a talented y'all need dude. To step up y'all's game.
That was funny. That's Sam
Headed
Swank.
To the Henderson.
On TikTok. Made me laugh yesterday. Hey, back to the Cowboys and Raiders, Buck. Do you know that in the Thanksgiving Day game, The Raiders and Cowboys combined for 28 penalties. God, 28 penalties.
So slow.
Which were the most in an NFL game since 2018. Were or they, 2016.
And they were both in the same game, same two groups that
but
played
this,
in the game?
You know, when you're making your picks of the week this week, tomorrow,
yes.
You know, the lead official in that game was a guy named Shane Hockley, who is the son of the legendary official. Ed. Can an official be legendary, Zay? Because you're the best official basketball official in the state of Texas.
They can be legendary.
But remember, he had the legendary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ed had the legendary guns, right? He was the first guy to go schmedium shirt with the great big arms and officiate a bunch of Super Bowls. But here's a number. His son, Shane, is following in the family business, and he is an official. And he was the crew chief on that game on Thanksgiving. It's a little note for you. When you find out who the officiating crews are, Shane Hockley's crew, road teams are now 9-2 this year. With Shane Hockley as that could be a coincidence. Road teams, 9-2 in the 11 games that crew has officiated.
They're going to get it even. They're going to make it even.
What's going on with that? 9-2?
That's messing with the points right there. Come on now, Shane.
I need to know who Shane's game is this week.
Yeah, he's no Mindy
That's
Rudolph.
That's the BetUS pick of the week. Is there going to be a road team?
That's not bad.
Well, that's the number you're looking for. This guy, does that tell you?
There's always an edge. You're always looking for the edge. Hey, his crew is the edge.
That's a pretty large sample size, 11 games.
Yes,
that's not three
is.
Games. That's 11 games. They're having an impact on the football game. That's pretty clear.
Yeah, you're looking for an edge. There it is. That dude and his gang of striped 8 or 9.
And they were calling everything.
Yes.
Last time a game had more penalties.
And Connor Williams is not even starting anymore.
He's usually good for a couple penalties.
Yes.
Per game. Well, that's my only fear for the Cowboys tonight. Because remember, go back to the Chiefs game, and we talked about this with Broaddus on Tuesday, Brian Broaddus. The Chiefs crew that they had was they let them do anything, right? You could mug receivers.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, get away with most of it, and they didn't call many penalties. Well, on the sidelines, Buck, you coach the game, you got to adjust to that, right? You know, if they're
you got to do the same thing on the other side.
Yes, take some shots, make them call flags. But, you know, 28 penalties in that game. That's the most since a game in 2016 featuring the Buccaneers and Raiders that had 29 penalties.
Wow.
And when do you find out when these crews are announced? I need to know that for my BetUS wallet. I'm going road team. You know, another tip that I've run with the last couple weeks, Buck, after week 10 in pro football, the last several years, if you bet the under in divisional matchups, games of divisional teams.
Those are tight games, aren't they?
Always low scoring. Oh, and it would have been, there were four of them last week, and I went 3-1. It would have been 4-0 except for the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game. The only reason that went over is Ben Roethlisberger throwing pick sixes. I mean, Pittsburgh wasn't going to score any points, and Cincinnati scored a lot of their points on Pittsburgh mistakes, which can happen. But, you know, 3-1, you'll still take that.
Absolutely.
Still take that, but we'll look at the schedule. But you do like the Cowboys tonight. You like the Cowboys by more than a touchdown. What would be your biggest concern if you're
– with the Cowboys?
Yes.
If they can run against that defense. Because I'm watching Dak over the last couple of weeks. That dude just dropping back with no run game is not good. He looks like a Dak of old. They need their run game to be going.
They do.
And if I have to start number 20, I do that. And I let Zeke.
Tony Pollard?
Yeah, and I go in there and let Zeke be a cheerleader for a while.
I don't know if I disagree with that. Because Tony Pollard's been more explosive this year.
Yes, he has.
Getting the edge. And, you know, this is a game to be creative. I mean, Kellen Moore. Without Mike McCarthy next to him, gets to show off a little bit tonight. He should have most of his weapons back. But I'm just concerned about the offensive line and that there's no continuity there with Joe Philbin not being there, the O-line coach or the assistant O-line coach. Mike McCarthy's not there. That's how the Saints can be in that game, is if they dominate the front and harass the run game and put them in third and longs and get after the quarterback and make it a lower-scoring game. By the way, on that note of divisional games, divisional matchups this week, Vikings-Lions. Is a divisional game this weekend. Also, Ravens-Steelers, divisional game.
And we've got to have a college
49ers-Seahawks.
In college football, there's got to be an upset somewhere in these playoff games.
I think so. Yeah, well, real quick, there are five divisional matchups this week, so we'll chart that for the unders.
Okay.
It's Bills-Patriots, Broncos-Chiefs, Niners-Seahawks, Ravens-Steelers, and the Vikings and Lions, those are your five.
Yeah, no matter
games.
Where the Bills and the Patriots play, you got to check out the weather for this.
Oh,
now
that's the other thing,
December.
Right? That stat holds after Week 10. After Week 10, so typically, you know, colder weather games too, and a lot of these divisional games. That's just the number. It's like 70%. The unders come in after Week 10 over the last five seasons. Hey, Buck, the College football playoff weekend, you mentioned it's championship Saturday.
Somebody's getting upset this weekend.
I think...
And I don't believe it's Michigan. I don't think Michigan's going to have that hard of a time with Iowa. Iowa's not near as athletic. They like to be physical. They want to be physical. But they're not athletic enough, I don't believe, especially on the offensive side.
This says, go Cougs, book it. Cougs.
Cougs are getting a lot of points. That's a lot of points.
10.5. But can they win the game and pull the upset? Because that's what has – Cincinnati can win this game by a point, and they're going to be in the Final Four.
Right.
As an undefeated team. Well, let me shouldn't say it that unequivocally, because if Alabama beats Georgia somehow, you know, that's going to become a
Well, the game,
debate.
The game, if I'm going to give you a 10,000-unit play, would be the Utah beating Oregon down like they beat them down the last time. I don't expect Oregon they got to be thinking we're not in it any longer in this, you know.
That's the Friday night game, Pac-12 yeah. championship.
Yeah, I think Pac-12.
I don't know, it's
I think,
tough to do that twice. You know, I know they could, but Utah had Oregon at home in a prime
them,
timer.
And they stomped them.
Hey, 20 years ago this week, the fateful Texas-Colorado Big 12 championship game where Texas stomped a mud hole in Colorado in the regular season, and then the Chris Sims interception game 20 years ago. But, again, or Utah probably, but, man, you can't imagine Oregon plays that bad again. And what's going to happen? Let me present this scenario. Bama somehow beats Georgia.
Yes.
6.5-point dog. They
roll
win the game.
Tide.
So then both Bama and Georgia are in. Michigan
yes.
beats Iowa, as you just predicted.
They're in, obviously.
Then who's four? Cincinnati is an undefeated team, or what if Oklahoma State beats Baylor? Could you put Oklahoma State ahead of Cincinnati?
I think you could.
Would you? Does that come down to style points?
Yeah, it depends on what Oklahoma State does to Baylor, how they win.
Zay? One loss Oklahoma State or undefeated Cincinnati as the fourth team.
Cincinnati needs to beat the crap out of Houston. That's what they need to really do.
That's why I say style points.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, that's how each team gets it done. Cincinnati versus Houston. If they take care of business and blow them out, then I say Cincinnati. If OK State destroys Baylor, then I'll say OK State.
Well, and here's the thing with Oklahoma State. If they win this game, they'll have back-to-back weeks of top 10 mm-hmm. victory, or top 12 victories. I mean, Baylor's number 9 in the AP poll right now. They slid a little bit in the committee ranking poll because of their close win over Texas Tech last week. But if Oklahoma State were to win that game, they'd be on a heck of a streak with back-to-back wins over Oklahoma and Baylor, both top 12 teams. Cincinnati is playing Houston. Now, Houston's ranked 21st, and they're a one-loss team, but you know, Cincinnati doesn't have the strength of schedule that
and
Oklahoma State does.
And once again, Notre Dame is crushing themselves by not getting in a conference, not being in any kind of game this weekend. This is not helping them. And plus, what's happened with Chip? I mean, with what's happened with Brian Kelly? Yeah, they need to join after getting a coach. They need to find a way to get into a conference.
Not happening.
You don't think they'll?
I think
suck
they
it
should.
Up?
I mean, I think you're right. I think it hurts them this week not to be playing a championship type game. They played in the ACC last year in a one off. In the COVID year, but no, they want their autonomy. They want to be Notre Dame.
They just want to be Notre Dame, don't they?
That's what they like, that NBC deal. Don't share it with anybody. And they like to, you know, one of the proud things for Notre Dame is the ability to build your own schedule, mm-hmm. not be locked into. I mean, Texas, you know, Texas has to play every year
there
in their
nothing,
conference.
Nothing like playing Army, Navy, and the Merchant Marine. Thank you very much,
Notre
Dame.
But then you can build your own schedule because they want to recruit nationally, right? They want to play games in California. They want to play games in Texas. They want to play games in Florida as a national brand.
And don't they want to play in the New York Bowl at Yankee Stadium? They like that deal.
Yeah, a few years ago they did. But, yeah, Notre Dame not playing. Everyone else is this weekend, and should be fun. And I'll mention that this guy said it again. Cougs, book it for the second time.
No.
I will be honest, I haven't watched much of Dana Holgorsen and his Cougs this year.
I've seen them play twice.
They're built on defense.
And they're pretty good on offense, too.
Well, that's Dana Holgorsen's side of the ball, right? I mean, mm-hmm. But whom have they beaten becomes my big question. Connecticut, Memphis, Temple,
Memphis,
South Florida.
Tulane.
Best win of the year was SMU when they beat SMU 44-37. East Carolina, Tulane, Tulsa, Navy. They're one, gosh, Grambling, Rice.
They beat Tech.
They lost to Tech.
No, they did. That's right. That was their first game, right?
Yeah, that was their one loss. It was way back on September the 4th. They've won every game since.
No, they're not
straight.
Winning that game Saturday.
You don't think so?
That's not the upset. The upset is somewhere else. Because I keep saying this Iowa-Michigan. I wonder if Michigan left it all out there on the field
last
week.
That's my only concern for the Wolverines is they shot their you-know-what last week against Ohio State, and the celebration afterwards was a frenzy.
You think they partied all the way until Wednesday, Thursday?
That's the fear,
the players,
right?
You think the players, Zay on campus after beating Ohio State, partied all the way to at least Wednesday? Coach, when did Coach get their focus? You think he got their focus on Tuesday's practice? Probably not.
Yeah, it might have took a while. You had Juwan Howard, the men's basketball coach, on the field, you know, greeting Hardball. They got blown out in Chapel Hill by North Carolina. So,
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they did. I saw that.
Too much hugging going on.
Too happy that we beat Ohio State.
Mm. Zay, I could look this up, but I want to sound dumb on the radio, which I do every day. I'm watching this game last night, North Carolina, Michigan. I see Juwan Howard. Who is coaching North Carolina? Now I couldn't think of the name.
Herb Davis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm like, I got to go look this up because I couldn't remember who they had hired. Because Roy Williams was there. He's sitting there with his mask on courtside, hanging out, watching his old team. But North Carolina smacked Michigan down, part of that ACC Big Ten showdown or challenge or whatever they call it. All right, we'll come back. When we do, we'll pick this up, the college football conversation. What say you? Cowboys Saints tonight, feeling good about it. Also, where are the upsets on Saturday in championship Saturday? And speaking of Notre Dame, they've made it official, apparently. They have a new head football coach to replace Brian Kelly. We'll talk about it next.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Yeah. Buck Off Thursday. We've been delivering the Buck Offs and Buck Ons all morning long, as have you on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776, brought to you by Green Mountain Flower Company. Buck on to the Clark Field Collective. That's official now. We talked to Brian Davis about it, efforting to talk to Nick Shuley, who is going to be the CEO of this, which was announced and launched yesterday. This is, if you're just tuning in hearing about it, we've talked about it throughout the morning, but the Clark Field Collective, unaffiliated with UT, but it is a prominent group of UT donors, former Longhorn athletes, and veteran sports marketer Nick Shuley announcing that they have formed and launched the first of its kind name, image, and likeness program called the Clark Field Collective. And Nick Shuley is going to be the CEO, as Brian told you, in the 8 o'clock hour. He's a big-time marketing guy here in town, worked with Lance Armstrong, Bo Jackson, Lollapalooza is one of the things he's marketed, a lot of musical acts. But it's already got several Longhorn former athletes a part of it, including Kenny Vaccaro and TJ Ford. And its stated goal is to be the largest dedicated fund in the nation for college athletes. It's already got a commitment of $10 million to start with. And I thought the insightful thing Brian Davis gave us earlier was that Nick Shuley says he wants each sport to have a committee of athletes that they work with, this collective, to help them, you know, with their branding, with their marketing, and with access to name, image, and likeness. And so it's a smart thing. It's kind of like the bridge between, you know, donors and those who want to support it and be a part of helping the student athletes at Texas, but it organizes it and then helps facilitate it with the student athletes. And obviously it pertains to football. I thought Bucky had a great point saying this is a recruiting tool that you have to use to be able to tell prospective recruits and transfer portal candidates of, you know, how you can help. And this is an organized way to get into the NIL part of things. And also, as Brian told us, I mean, this isn't just for football. I mean, there's a lot of great athletes at the University of Texas that are world-class in the swimming pool, on the track and field realm, and in, you know, baseball team that, you know, they can use this to help, you know, do name, image, likeness, and branding for themselves moving forward. And the $10 million is just the tip. Just the start, and you got to think this can be, as I read somewhere this morning, this is going to be modeled all over the country as it grows, because it's a smart way to do it. It feels like you got to organize it somehow, Zay. It can't just be chaos with, you know, players seeking their own deals with different businesses. This allows, you know, donors to UT and supporters to get involved, but know that it's not just, you know, haphazard in the wild, wild west. There's actually a group that's, in addition to Nick Shuley being the CEO, there's going to be a board of directors on this, along with these committees from each team, helping to facilitate the and maximize the opportunities for name, image, and likeness.
Yeah, you know, we know of each state NIL is a little bit different. So in Texas, you got to navigate a way to which it works out for everybody, and I think this is a good start in doing that.
It is. So buck on to that. That's pretty cool. And as I said, I've sent a text to Nick Shuley, try to get him on the show, hopefully tomorrow, to explain the vision of where this thing is going. But it makes sense, and it's not affiliated with UT. I mean, UT can't have anything to do with this, you know, legally. It's outside of UT, but it's a bunch of former UT donors and athletes and businesses that want to be a part of that moving forward. As we mentioned, recruiting, Arch Manning, Isidore Newman High School is where Steve Sarkisian is expected to be today, making his latest pitch to the grandson of Archie Manning and the nephew of Peyton and Eli. That'll be a big one, and obviously that's a program changing type recruit, and the Longhorns, you know, in the mix according to all accounts. That Ole Miss is a favorite of his, as his father, of course, his uncle Eli and his grandfather Archie went to Ole Miss. Georgia also seen as a prominent contender there. They're playing in the SEC championship game, and Steve Sarkisian and the Longhorns are a strong contender according to most recruiting insiders because of the relationship that Steve Sarkisian and A.J. Milwee, the quarterback's coach, have built with Arch and the family dating back to the Alabama time when they were, you know, coaching under Nick Saban. And so you got to feel like with Archie Manning, Arch Manning comes in with branding of his own. Everybody knows the Manning name. It's legendary in pro football and college football. So he comes in, you know, on third base as it goes with branding. He could start selling himself right now once he gets out of high school. But if there is an apparatus like this, like this Clark Field Collective, Zay, with, you know, this tech hub that Austin is becoming, this boom town, that can be appealing to a youngster who wants to go play high-level football. But at the same time, you know, the future big-time tech opportunities with, you know, companies like Tesla and Apple and Google and Samsung, everything that's going on here, I mean, that's a big opportunity right there.
Oh, hell yeah, it is. And Arch Manning, you know, he's been under the limelight long enough to understand what he's worth. So he's going to make a decision that's definitely best for him and his family. And the University of Texas clearly gives you a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, and education's important to him, obviously, and his family. So Texas provides that. But I still believe Georgia is probably the favorite in this just because the system and the program Kirby Smart has built in the SEC East. But look, Texas moving to the SEC, Texas building this collective, Texas selling the vision that Steve Sarkisian is and the relationships and his ability to develop quarterbacks, because, you know, Arch Manning's next step is professional football. I mean, that's pretty obvious. And, well, college football is already professional football, but the NFL is his next step. But a guy like that, man, can really – and that's not till 2023. You still got to figure out what you're doing in 2022 at quarterback, but the Longhorns with the full court press today. But there we go. So we got that story out there, the other Buck-ons and Buck-offs of the morning. Marcus Freeman is the new head coach at Notre Dame, it appears. Now, we had heard this, you know, when the shocking news came down on Monday night into Tuesday morning that Brian Kelly was bolting Notre Dame to leave for LSU. He was officially introduced at a press conference yesterday. With that news coming down, you know, your initial thought is, well, they're going to go after Luke Fickell. They're going to go after Matt Campbell. They're going to go after, you know, a proven head coach. But there was immediate push within the people that cover the program to just promote from within with Marcus Freeman. Now, here's the pro side of that is that one of the things over 11 years that Brian Kelly did at Notre Dame was he modernized the football program. He got it back stabilized. You know, there was a rough stretch in the middle of that with Brian Kelly. But, man, there's no doubt in the last 5 years, outside of Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State, they've been as consistent a winning program as there is in college football. And that's credit to Brian Kelly. He built that, put it in place. And, you know, the argument was, well, Marcus Freeman keeps the continuity. We keep Tommy Reese as our offensive coordinator. We keep our recruiting classes for this year and next mostly intact with this coaching staff. And we just keep building. The con side of that is Marcus Freeman has never been a head coach. I mean, at any level. I mean, he is a former Ohio State linebacker who played, he's a former Houston Texan, played in the NFL for a few years, and then, of course, it made his way on the coaching ranks, started at Kent State and Ohio State, and then at Cincinnati, where he became the defensive coordinator for Luke Fickell, and he just got to Notre Dame 1 year ago. Or not even that. He was last offseason. He was a hot commodity on the defensive coordinator carousel, and, you know, had multiple offers, including one from LSU, and Marcus Freeman took the offer at Notre Dame. And it's turned out to be a smart move for him because now he is succeeding Brian Kelly, apparently, as the new head coach. I mean, I see where they're going with continuity. We're talking about that a lot with Texas, of building some stability into the program. But, man, 35 years old, never been a head coach, and now taking over Notre Dame. That's a tough place for on-the-job training, especially a couple losses in to a team that's now used to winning 10, 11, 12 games each year and being in contention for the Final Four, which they are again this year. I mean, they're sitting right there at number six. Things fall their way. They could find themselves into the Final Four coming up. So that's the program Marcus Freeman inherits. I do think they see this kind of like, you know, again, I don't know with 1 year with Marcus Freeman if you can declare this, but, you know, when Bob Stoops saw young Lincoln Riley and said, this is the guy, this is the heir apparent, this is the guy that can run this program and do it from the top down, Bob Stoops proved to be accurate on that. Same thing with Urban Meyer and Ryan Day at Ohio State. When Urban Meyer left, Ryan Day was sitting there. He's taken over, and he's kept alive the winning because the program was already in a really, really good place. Same with Bob Stoops in Oklahoma. And that's the case at Notre Dame, and I think that's what they're banking on, as opposed to, you know, going outside and, you know, here's the thing for Notre Dame. If you're going to wait on Luke Fickell, that could be a while. I mean, Luke Fickell's got a real chance to get themselves into the Final Four, and now you're playing for a national championship. You're not bolting even to Notre Dame while that's going on. So you're not, if you're, you know, Oklahoma or Notre Dame, are you going to wait to talk to Luke Fickell until January or even into mid-January? And make that official and let him hire. Then he's got to go hire his coaching staff and all that surrounding recruiting classes and name him in transfer portals. I don't know. I mean, it might be smart to wait, but at the same time, you know, you can keep Marcus Freeman in place and continue that positive momentum for the program. Now, they could go after a Matt Campbell and make that move. But if a Fickell is the guy indeed that maybe they would go for, you have to wait on that one, which is a think about that for Luke Fickell's side of it. Geez Louise, eh? You're a college football coach. You've grown in the role from Ohio State to Cincinnati, and you've built that program into a title contender. Well, now Notre Dame and Oklahoma are available, and they might both be interested. But you've got your team to coach. I mean, you've got a national championship to try to win or at least play for. I mean, those are two of the top five jobs in the country. That's the spot to be in. I mean, I guess it's a good thing, but at the same time, you know, I'm sure at some point in his life, Luke Fickell thought, man, I'd love to be the head coach at Notre Dame. I mean, golly, growing up in Ohio, right there next door, the Mighty Irish, and now maybe it's sitting there in front of him, but, you know, he can't walk on his football team now. That would be ridiculous. But that's where he's at. And Oklahoma, that's a top program, too, that is open and available. But it looks like Oklahoma is angling towards Brett Venables. Earlier in the week, Tyler McComas, our buddy who covers and does radio up there in Norman in Oklahoma City, said that he was hearing immediately that Brett Venables was going to be the guy, and really that's coming from Bob Stoops' recommendation, that Venables, the Clemson defensive coordinator who was at Oklahoma before joining Dabo Swinney, is the likely choice to replace Lincoln Riley at Norman. So we'll keep an eye on those two developing stories, but it does look like it's official in South Bend. Marcus Freeman, the new head coach of the Fighting Irish at 35 years old. We'll be back. A couple final thoughts on this Cowboys game with the Saints tonight. Good news and bad news for the Cowboys. Also reset those top stories and hand it off to Light the Tower. It's B&E on the Horn.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
B&E with you. Coming up top of the hour, you know, it's Light the Tower with Craig Way and Snoop Daniels today. No Jeff Howe. Jeff's got some football games to attend tonight. Craig will tell you about that coming up. But Vic Schaefer will be part of that show. Andrew Sanders, head football coach at Vandergrift High School, on the heels of yesterday's conversation with Todd Dodge at Westlake. And with that in mind, look who has sat down as Bucky had to bolt out here a little bit early for an appointment.
Yeah.
But he is Snoop Daniel, the glue. Of the Horn, baby. This guy is the solder of what we do with the high school football, man.
Thank you, man.
Grinding over there, doing a great job at Flex ATX. Anybody buy any hats on that?
I hope so. I try not to look at those analytics and keep my focus on the content. But I appreciate you, Aaron, because Dave Fralick, he's leaving for Houston to do
Fox
television
7.
Down there. And I'm telling you, like, between you, him, and Lise Hudson and Jason DeSore, that's the reason Flex even exists, because I had to leave one place to come here. And it's been a year and a half now, so it's, it's still early stages, but feeling nostalgic and thankful during the holidays. Well, so
it was an easy call. They said, hey, how do we build a great high school football product? And I said, you want to save 10 years of work? Hire Snoop Daniel. And here we are. But so, Snoop, am I wrong to suggest that I've been here a long time, 30 years here now, mm-hmm. in Austin, and 25 doing radio. This Saturday is as big as a local Saturday as we've had, and maybe in history, but boy, to have Westlake playing Vandergrift at DKR with Lake Travis playing Brennan. I mean, this is LBJ with a chance to, as the number one team in 4A, to continue. And this is – This is big time.
And people forget Liberty Hill. Liberty Hill is on a come up. Liberty Hill is the next big thing. Even though they've been doing it on a smaller level, that community, they are monsters in a good way.
Well, that's right. They have the history of winning and the culture, but the city's growing to them.
Right, yeah.
So population's going up, talent levels, you know, rising as you add pieces, and it's well said to put them in there. But, man, this thing,
Step 183, real quick, where the toll road ends, near where Leander Glenn is positioned now, north of Leander High School. It's just expanding out towards Liberty Hill, and is bringing Liberty Hill to be more Austin-centric. You hear about people dissing Westlake or Vandergrift because they aren't Austin proper, but now we're considering Liberty Hill Austin proper, and that's...
It's Central Texas, right? It's Central Texas High School football, and that's what you've covered for a long, long time, Snoop. And am I wrong to say it's as big a day as we've had in a long time as far as local high school football and the big picture of it?
For me, Westlake Vandergrift is the biggest Austin area football game since, I guess, Lake Travis versus Cedar Park 2011, and that's, you know, that's a full decade. And that was the early days of Ethan Fry and Brian Hogan at Cedar Park.
No relation.
No relation. Yeah, correct. And who did Lake Travis? They had Colin Lagasse at that point, a young Baker Mayfield. It's a big game.
Well, and let's add to this that I heard Todd Dodge yesterday with you guys, and Todd's always great. This is his swan song, right? He's a Hall of Famer, one of the best high school football coaches ever, but he's a Texas alum and graduated Texas, played college football at Texas, and he said yesterday is the first time he's ever going to coach a game in that stadium since he left.
I didn't even know he was a quarterback at UT, to be honest.
Yeah,
I met him when he was at Marble Falls with Coach Salazar.
And his defensive coordinator, who's likely to succeed him at Westlake, but that's not official. But no, and this is his last game, potentially. You know, if Vandergrift were to win it, this would be it. But you add to the fact that Westlake is, in some regards, the number one team in the nation for some people, right?
Yeah, they're dominant.
37-game winning streak or whatever it is, three straight, they're going for a third straight state title. And I've heard folks who have covered and been around Westlake football for a long time saying it's maybe the best team they've had, the most complete team they've had.
I tell them pump their brakes because 2015 when Sam was a junior and had Nakia Watson and they lost to North Shore in overtime down at Energy Stadium in Houston, I think that was the best Westlake team, but this one's pretty good as well.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be a fun game. That's at DKR. What's the time of that kickoff?
It's a 2 o'clock kick. I feel that Vandergrift does legit have a shot. Last time these two teams played, 2017, it was a district game early in September. Vandergrift actually led late until the last minute. Westlake scores a late touchdown. Sam Ellinger tosses it, and they win. That was Taylor Anderson with that touchdown. And then Westlake won it 33-31. Yeah. So it's the last time they met. It was a barn burner. These kids know each other. There's lacrosse ties. Ethan Burke and... Ethan Burke at Westlake, who just verbally committed to Michigan for football, was a Maryland lacrosse commit. And then on the other side of Vandergrift, they have Ryan Shepherd and the running back, Griffin Schaefer, both D1-bound lacrosse players as well. So there's a lot of familiarity in this game.
Well, West Austin, growing up playing Pop Warner and middle school football against one another. I remember, you know, my son Nolan, who helps you out a little bit on Flex.
Yes, he does. You know, and everywhere across this building, by the way.
When he was playing high school baseball at Hayes, there was the two-year stretch while he was there where Hayes was in the district with Westlake and Vandergrift and Leander, and there was some driving done in the Hogan household, by the way, driving from, you know, south, you know, Buda all the way to Leander for football, for baseball games. But, yeah, they were in the same district for a short period of time. Now they're meeting for the quarterfinal action to move to the semifinals. And as Craig Wade just told us, the winner likely to face Katy in the semifinal round next week, which might be the de facto state title game. So whoever wins here, only 3 weeks to go. Also, LBJ, talk a little bit about those Jaguars.
Well, they manhandled Bernie. Bernie couldn't even tackle LBJ. This is like boys versus men. I think the Jaguars are destined. They should meet with Stephenville, at least get to the state finals. But, of course, Coach Fenner dealing with tragedy. This team, not only super talented, but now emotionally motivated. This could be the year.
Yeah, what was the deal with the coach's son, right?
Well, yeah, I don't know details. I just know, you know, he's no longer with us. And really, it's been like a tough week for high school football in general. A player from the Manor community graduated 2021. LaVenta Red Benford, we call him Red, passed away as well. So it's been a strange holiday season. I do, real quick, while I have the platform, Lago Vista, another community that's on the edge of Austin proper but growing. The Vikings are still in the playoffs as well. They got to take on Industrial. So the entire Central Texas area on the rise.
East, west, north, northwest.
It's true. So true.
Oh, man.
It's fun to watch. We're really blessed.
And once again on a Buck Off and Buck On Thursday, biggest Buck On of the day was to the young man in Michigan. I don't know if you heard that story, Snoop. The terrible school shooting up there in Oxford, Michigan. Turned out that a 16-year-old high school football player, a junior, was a hero. He lost his life, but he ran at the shooter, occupied him, and tried to wrestle the gun away, which all the eyewitnesses said saved a lot of lives. That if not for his quick actions and running into the problem, which cost him his life, saved a lot of people at that high school. So props to that young man. Tyler Meyer was his name. Amazing story and tragic story. Snoop, great work. You'll be coming up
Thanks,
with Craig
E.
on Light the Tower.
Yes, sir.
What
Welcome.
A high school weekend. Buck on to you and all the work you do. Craig next with Snoop. As we mentioned, Vic Schaefer and Drew Sanders will be guests on that show. Light the Tower through the midday. RBKD this afternoon. Longhorn Weekly with Coach Sark, or with Coach Beard tonight, I should say. Then Isaiah Call, you ready? Right call tonight, Zay?
Oh, yeah, always ready.
8 o'clock, 8 to 9 with Isaiah Collier. And you have a special guest tonight. People want to tune in and hear a local player that is the all-time leading scorer at UT Rio Grande Valley. Leader in minutes. Sorry, Zay. Leader in minutes. That's tonight, 8 to 9. Of course, Cowboys playing the Saints over on 101.9 and AM 1260. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you zero dark early tomorrow morning.
Fitness will always be about keeping a routine. And the best routines in life will always make time for enjoying yourself. Michelob Ultra, superior light beer. Enjoy responsibly. AB Michelob Ultra Light Beer, St. Louis, Missouri.